There's been a lot of investment within ag tech on the production side of agriculture. So you have really interesting innovations, with hardware and with sensors and with drones, and you have vertical farming, indoor farming. There has been no innovation on labor and labor management, but the biggest spend in agriculture is labor. And so that's our starting point.
Welcome to the Just Raise podcast. This episode is a deep dive into agriculture. If you read the newsletter, you know that I've become a little bit obsessed with this idea of companies building products on top of broken government infrastructure, and also with VCs funding startups in heavy industry. This conversation with CISO Labor is a playbook on how to build one of those kinds of companies. Our guest is Michael Gerges, founder and CEO of CISO Labor, a visa platform for seasonal agriculture workers, a marketplace for labor, and maybe even a fintech. For all of those reasons, they just raised a $25 million Series A from Index, NFX, Founders Fund, and a couple of other fantastic VCs. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Michael Gerges, founder and CEO of CISO Labor. All right. Well, Michael, it is fantastic to have you on the show. To start us off, I would love for you to give us a breakdown on the labor marketplace right now. There's apparently a massive labor shortage in the world of ag tech. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. The biggest problem in agriculture is access to labor. So nationwide, there are two job openings for every job applicant. In California, which is the biggest market for specialty crop agriculture, there's four job openings for every job applicant. And so you have a labor shortage in a lot of industries, but in agriculture, it's been hit really hard. And the reason for that is because it's very hard work. And as economies get stronger, you get less and less of a domestic labor force. So what you're seeing in the U.S., you see actually all over the world. In the UK, they bring in workers from Eastern Europe. In Japan, workers are often coming from Brazil. Canada relies heavily on labor from Mexico and Latin America. So it's not surprising, but it's a huge issue.
I read, I think, in your investment breakdown that something like $3 billion worth of crops rot in the field because there aren't enough people to pick them right now.
Yeah, there's a saying in agriculture, crop doesn't wait. So when the fruit's ready to drop, it's ready to drop. And when it drops, if there's no one to pick it, then you can't use it. So this is huge. This is like a multi-billion dollar problem. The problems we're solving are beyond just that specific problem of having labor and having labor on time. But that's really our entry point into supporting farmers.
Yeah. So break down what you do at CISO Labor.
Just give you a little bit more context on the industry. So you're a farm, let's say you employ 100 workers year round. During the harvest, you might need 500 workers. So you have seasonal labor needs. And you can try and hire domestic workers, meaning people that are in the US. And domestic means they could be undocumented, they could be here legally, but it just means they're in the US. Or you can bring in visa workers. And the visa program was started in the late 70s. And it basically was meant to be like a reliable, regulated way to support your domestic labor force with foreign workers. There's a visa called the H-2A visa. So this is how you deal with seasonal labor. Either you hire domestic or you bring in foreign workers. And this program has grown 300% in the last few years, and it's expected to grow another 500%. And what you find is that farms are using this program and relying on it heavily, but don't understand how it works. I mean, they're like farmers want to farm. They're not really great at the back office. What we found when we spent time with farms is, yeah, there's a labor shortage, but you also have this really big gap in like managing your back office. And the players that have built software for agriculture on the workforce management front are all software that was built in the 70s that was outsourced and hasn't kept up with labor regulation. So today, what we do is we streamline the visa process, provide compliant software, digital onboarding software, and we're basically building an HR stack where payroll is the next big product that we're going to be launching to support farms.
So you started as a way to streamline this visa process because we have this massive shortage of people to actually pick crops, labor shortage in agriculture. And now you're scaling into this whole kind of software SaaS platform because you realize that the payment for all of these workers effectively runs on paper. it's checks or cash, I imagine.
Yeah, so it's a few different problems we're trying to solve. And it's funny, you're bringing this up. And as I think back to when we started the company, we started and we said, we're a labor marketplace. And then as we started working on all these different software stacks, we said, okay, actually, we're a vertical software company, which is what I'd say we're closest to now. But then there's also financial services we're providing for workers and payroll that we're building. So in essence, we're kind of a fintech company as well. So how we define our company, we're still figuring out. But the idea of this is an underserved market. And so building software across the vertical is really like the core thing that we do.
You're not just trying to build a marketplace for laborers. You're building a tool to process the H-2A visa that then feeds into having thousands or millions of laborers who are already vetted that you can then go provide to farms.
Yeah. And when we launched, we thought, okay, the biggest pain point has to be like finding the workers. And so the labor marketplace component is our big value proposition. But as we spent more time with farms and as we started to work with bigger and bigger farms, we realized there's actually an abundance of labor all over the world that wants to come on this visa. And there is definitely a matching problem and a disinformation problem. But the big farms have recruiting functions in place. So they go and they'll host event in Guadalajara or in Tijuana or in Juarez, and they'll do a recruiting event. And how does that word spread? It spreads like fire. It's really like, let's say you have 100 guys you employ. You tell them, hey, tell your cousins and your friends and refer people to come to this event. And 500 people show up in a week's notice. And it's just kind of word of mouth and text of, hey, this farm is hosting an event. This is your opportunity to come work in the U.S. So actually like being the source of labor is something that we definitely do. We have partners and a team on the ground in Mexico. We have a Facebook group that's the largest in the country that took us a few months to build with 30,000 plus workers in it. But I wouldn't say like finding workers is the big pain point at this point, because there's so much demand to enter the program. It's really streamlining the process end to end and making it efficient.
Yeah. So to dive into each of those pieces individually, the turning this government process that's bureaucratic and Byzantine into a seamless software app, I think is a really fascinating thing for startups to do, both in your space, but you know, in taxes, in a bunch of different areas, because you kind of have this captive market who has to do this process because it's government mandated by law.
Yep.
How did you actually break down this process into a clean software app? What's kind of the design methodology behind that?
You know, Bill Grilly always says, like, do things that don't scale before you do things that do scale. That's kind of like the approach we took. So we literally, just like anyone else who would apply for the program, before we built any software, we did the program manually. So I started cold calling farms that were small users of the program that probably didn't have a lot of money to spend on expensive immigration lawyers. And I said, hey, we're a new company that's interested in doing this for you, and we'll do your first visa petition for free. And an ostrich farmer called me back and he said, oh, you said free, huh? Which we should have known at that point, like, oh, this is going to be a messy process. Then we figured out, okay, well, how do you streamline this? There was like an element of what you would do with immigration software, building off of these workflows that are not specific to this visa, but like exist for other immigration flows, and then customizing it and tailoring it and make a very specific workflow, but focusing on digitizing the parts of the process that are difficult, confusing, where there's a lot of mistakes. So whether you're a small farm that's new to the program and you need guidance, or you're a large farm that's doing, you know, the biggest farm that we work with does 122 different applications to bring in a few thousand workers across 40 different growing sites all over the U.S. And so they're trying to manage 120 different applications at the same time, where you're working with four different government agencies and then a state workforce agency. You're getting different types of insurance. And that's a lot to manage if you're using a spreadsheet and a notebook to do it and a whiteboard. It's actually amazing. Most farms that we've gone and visited just had everything on a whiteboard.
So what's kind of the thesis for CISO Labor? How do you think of where you're going to fit into farming and this intersection of all these different stakeholders over the next 5, 10 years as you try and build the strategy out?
There's been a lot of investment within ag tech on the production side of agriculture. So you have really interesting innovations, you know, with hardware and with sensors and with drones, and you have vertical farming, indoor farming. There has been no innovation on labor and labor management, but the biggest spend in agriculture is labor. And so that's our starting point. So like we basically are obsessive and focused on helping you get labor, helping you follow the rules, understand the rules, comply with the rules for employing workers, and then expanding access to things like healthcare for farm workers, financial services for farm workers. So really like the center of it all is like, we want to be the single source of truth for your worker records and kind of like how you manage your workforce, and then build different modules until you have a comprehensive HR system that is tailored for agriculture. And agriculture is like, you know, at this point, a heavily regulated industry. There's MSPA, the Migrant Seasonal Protection Worker Protection Act, and there's a couple other bodies that regulate farm labor. And you have extremely difficult payment calculations. So one farm might have three different crops that they're growing, and some workers are getting paid piece rate, meaning you get paid based on what you're picking, and it has to be above a minimum. And then they might have individual piece rate and crew piece rate and non-productive time, and then different tasks are just hourly. And then if you have visa workers and domestic workers, the wages change for everybody. Then you have tax deductions. And so it's not a simple payroll system that, you know, like that you're just paying people hourly and it's like pretty easy to calculate. And then because you want to really ensure that like these workers are coming to the US and working enough that it's worth their time, you need to guarantee a set number of hours that workers get over the course of the contract. You know, all these regulations are there for a reason. They're meant to protect workers, and that's a good thing. But what's not a good thing is if the employers don't understand how to comply with the regulation. And I spoke to a farmer who's actually the vice president of this nonprofit that supports farms and workers with these types of programs. And he said, you know, off the record, I don't know if there's a farm in America that's compliant 100% of the time, not because they're bad actors, but because we don't know how to do it. And it's just like some of the regulations just like aren't grounded in logic or haven't been updated. So there's just like a kind of a history, and then you don't have regulation passing and being updated at a national level, unfortunately, because we've had so much stalling in politics.
Do you think that you'll be able to strip out some of that stuff, some of those extra people and costs, so that, you know, you pay for this piece of software and it eliminates a bunch of the upfront costs you would normally have to pay to get this done?
Yeah, absolutely. So we just launched something called Self-Filer. So instead of using an external party to file your application, and we could be the external party or it could be somebody else, you can file it yourself. And especially if you've been in the program, I mean, there are farms that have been using the program for 20, 30 years. And so being able to take some of the process and do it yourself gives some of those guys who want to save money on the upfront costs like an opportunity to do so. And then you would still probably have lawyers that you would work with if you got stuck in the process, or if you needed help reaching the housing agency or the Department of Labor. Our goal is not necessarily to completely change how this process is done with service providers, but make it more efficient. So that means we could partner with service providers. The farm could use the software directly. We can be the service provider. But the software just kind of makes sure that things are done correctly. You know, there's a saying that a lot of tech companies will say is 99% of the time when there's an error, it's not that your software doesn't work, it's that it's human error. And so in application, there's a lot more human error. It's not software, it's just people handwriting and typing in PDFs and documents. And sometimes like these documents are thousands of pages of records that you're putting dates on and application information on. That human error can be the difference between you have workers to pick the crop and the crop rotting in the field because there was a typo.
Yeah, it's amazing. I feel like if you can find a industry that still runs on paper and just digitize it, like that alone will just print money, because the efficiencies you get. You mentioned to me before we started recording the tools you're building for actual laborers. Can you dive into that side, since this does affect both your main customers or the farms right now, but given how many laborers you're working with, there's a whole opportunity to build on top of that.
right now, the program is a pretty amazing opportunity for workers because they get paid 10 to 20 times more money in the US than they do back home. So we've brought in workers from 10 different countries, but the biggest user of the program is Mexico. It's also big in Guatemala, El Salvador, Jamaica, South Africa. And, you know, the US has its faults on the labor side, but we're actually like way ahead of most countries in terms of labor regulation. So workers come here legally. They, you know, they're not going through a really terrible experience and using coyotes to come, you know, undocumented here. They're coming here legally. They're getting housed and they're getting transportation and they're getting a wage that's, you know, significantly higher than what they make back home. And so that's a great part of the program. What's not great is like they just don't have a lot of information on if they're going to be selected for a season. So sometimes you have workers coming to work for 6 or 9 months and they don't know until a week before that they're coming. So we're building a worker-facing app so you can improve communication between the farms and the workers. And then the two other things that are on our mind are building financial services for these workers. So about 90% of the workers are unbanked, but 90% of them now have a smartphone. So smartphone penetration is so high that it's inevitable that we should be leveraging neobanks and kind of the improvements in the in digital banking to bring this workforce into like a financial system. And that's beneficial for them because right now you get paid with a physical check and then you go cash it and then you go to Western Union and you send money back home and you can lose as much as 10%, if not more, of your paycheck just getting access to it. And then, you know, another thing that's kind of sad is in Georgia, one farmer was telling us, everybody knows farm workers get paid on Friday and they take out cash. And so there's a lot of robberies. And so, you know, that's a terrible thing that happens. And then the farms are driving workers sometimes an hour, 2 hours to a Western Union or to somewhere where they can actually access a payday lender or just get cash out. So there's like the financial services component, which is about getting workers banked and getting them more cost-efficient ways to send money back home. And then the second thing is healthcare. So again, 90% is like the magic number here. 90% of workers don't sign up for healthcare because in Latin America, the average person has 0.5 insurance plans. In the US, the average American has 6.5 insurance plans. So we're a lot more comfortable and familiar with insurance. We have, you know, health insurance, car insurance, homeowners insurance, renters insurance, life insurance, right? This doesn't exist in a lot of other countries. And so the workers who are here for 6 months or more, which is the majority, are all eligible for the Affordable Care Act. And no one signs up for it because it's just like a foreign concept to them because America has such a unique healthcare system. So giving people access to healthcare and banking are kind of like core to like our long-term mission.
And it sounds like once they have these physical checks in hand and they have a smartphone, if they had a banking app they knew and trusted and were signed up for, they could just take a picture and then they would have, you know, money in a bank account. They could use an ATM to pull out cash.
Yeah. I mean, even better is direct deposit, right? So if you have a bank account, you don't need to get the physical check. So like some of the barriers in the past were, okay, so you've got a farm in the middle of nowhere and you need to drive all these workers to a bank and you need to get the bank person to come to the farm, explain it to them, then drive them over, get them signed up. And then they're not going to go back because it's so far away. So there's just like, you know, it doesn't feel comfortable. So there's still going to be some work we have to do to educate people on how digital banking works and how you can sign up for a bank account without, you know, leaving your house and then build the trust. And hey, like, you know, let's show you how you can access your money, how your family back home can access the money. You know, for someone who hasn't used the banking system, that's actually like a big leap of faith you need to take.
One of my favorite questions to ask is why now for companies like this? Why is now the best time? And I guess why hasn't any of this been done before?
I would argue that the now has existed for a few years because the labor shortage has been around for a while. It's just gotten continuously worse. And so H-2A visas as a market, I would say, wasn't big enough a few years back for somebody to say, okay, let's start a technology company exclusively focused on H2A and let's raise venture capital and let's show this is a big market. But at this point, it is quite large. And so like that's part of it. The second part of it is just like how bad the labor shortage is and how much farmers are looking to a solution. You know, during the pandemic, at the start of the pandemic, Trump banned every visa group from entering the US. And then the next day he unbanned H2A because rightfully people, and he banned it for good reason, right? Like with the start of the pandemic, no one knew what was happening. So like you just didn't want people coming into the country because of COVID. Yeah. But H-2A was banned for a day. And H-2A is the only program that actually was unbanned immediately and that grew because the economy kind of, or agriculture, it takes a halt if all of a sudden you don't have workers to pick the crop. So there's like a lot of pieces of information that show like, hey, this is a really important and large opportunity and it's kind of at a crisis point. And then like other things that have made it easier to, or like made it more appropriate that this started now is even farmers are becoming more tech savvy. The average farmer is still quite old compared to like other professions. And a lot of farms are family farms, but you have the generation after them coming in. And usually it's like, you know, sons and daughters taking over the farm and they're more tech savvy and they're more open to digital solutions. So those are kind of like the main reasons. And then the market opportunity of doing visas along with HR software in general makes it a more interesting opportunity versus just trying to do one or the other.
That kind of, as you talk about the customers, it makes me think of the VCs you've brought on. You have a pretty fantastic group of VCs, NFX, Founders Fund, Index led the round, the Chainsmokers are in there too. I'm curious, how did that syndicate come together? Did, you know, some of your investors introduce other investors who they thought would be a good fit? Did you start with cold emails?
No, just like signing up a customer, just like hiring somebody, like there's nothing that beats a strong referral. And so I got connected to some really good angels early on in the process. A gentleman called Connor Thielman, who was an angel investor and an executive at ServiceTitan, introduced me to Index early on. And he introduced me to the CEO of RigUp, which is now WorkRise, Zien. And Zien saw the similarities between what WorkRise does with like oil and gas workers and compliance and like the marketplace components with what we're trying to do in agriculture. And so I just built relationships with good angels and then, you know, really, really good CEOs who had similarities and who were excited about what we were doing. And that helped us get in front of, you know, some of the top VCs. And then there's another one, was a guy called Moshe Lifshitz at Shrug VC. He was an early angel and he sent a update to his LPs. And I guess our update stood out. And so we got inbounded by a lot of the big firms like Founders Fund right after that. But we were fortunate to like get in front of a lot of really amazing people early on in the process, including Nina from Index and the Founders Fund team and NFX. And then it was just building a relationship. It wasn't like everybody said yes right away. They saw the progress. They saw the mission. They gave us really good feedback early on that helped us get to the point where now they're ready to go and take it to the investment committee and say, hey, this is a really exciting company.
A couple of key angels with great networks can go a really long way. And RigUp is a pretty awesome company. I hadn't made that connection, but they are a lot like what you're building. And they've built an awesome product for oil rig workers.
No, yeah, Zen's definitely like an inspiration, like his team and what they've built. And these are industries that like, they're not the sexiest industries off the bat. And you don't think about technology for these industries. But one thing that like I was always aware of when I was starting a company is like I'm not the most technical person. I can't really talk to you about Web3 for very long. I can't talk to you about crypto for very long. I'm obsessed with like job creation and labor. I always have been. And so I knew that, you know, as I was exploring agriculture and the labor issues, like the opportunity to create a labor marketplace was really what excited me. Initially, I wanted to do government and I wanted to be a policymaker to do job creation because I was in school studying economics and studying labor during the last recession when the unemployment rate was high. And when I got into tech and I worked at the education labor marketplace before this company, I was like, surprised at how fast you could create jobs and actually grow a company through technology. And so like that was kind of like the trigger in my head for getting this going.
The last thing we always do on the show is a lightning round. We have a couple questions. First one is always, what's top of mind for you? What are the couple of things that have to go right over the first couple months or next couple months for Sesso to really take off?
Net dollar retention or just like retention in general. It's really cool to build new products and try and generate revenue from new products. But I think like the most important thing you can do is create a really sticky and loyal customer base by listening to your customers, serving them correctly, and then like building and improving your product before you try and move on to all the shiny bells and whistles out there. You know, Workday got to a billion ARR before they built the second product. So we're tempted by all of the exciting things in on our roadmap, but core to our thesis is like stay focused on like what brought your customers here. How do you grow revenue with your customers with your current product? How do you make that product something so good that they want to refer everyone in their network to it and then start expanding from there?
If you were starting from scratch tomorrow, what would you do differently?
There was a little bit of an intimidation factor with like working with enterprise farms and some of the big players. Also, like, you know, starting from scratch, you don't have introductions to the biggest farms and you don't have credibility. So we spent a lot of time early on trying to solve every problem for any farm that came through the door until we got enough validation to go up to the bigger farms and until the software is at a place where we could go to those bigger farms. I wouldn't change much of what we did other than we tried to say yes to everything. So I was like, you know, we were Googling motels in Georgia, trying to help farms find housing for workers. And like, there was no software play there. There was nothing we could do really to support there, but we tried to support everything and just make the customer happy. And saying, no, I can't do that, or I don't know how to do that is sometimes the right answer, as hard as it is like an entrepreneur who wants to like, you know, make your customers extremely happy. You still need to stay in your lane.
How did you find this problem?
Definitely like a little bit of luck. One of my favorite parts of this company is the idea to automate the visa came from farm workers. So my cousin Marcia is an organic farmer in the Central Valley, and she wanted my help trying to grow her farm and buy the property next door. And the more time we spent together talking through it, the more I said, well, you can't buy the property next door because you're going to need more labor and you don't have reliable labor and you don't know if you'll have reliable labor. And so like, even though you want to grow and you have a great reputation as a farmer and you're speaking at conferences, you can't grow until you solve your labor problem. So that was like how I got introduced to the labor issues. And then I was looking at a few different ways to address the labor shortage with robotics, and every farm kept saying like, figure out how to get us labor. Like, we don't need another strawberry picking machine that isn't being used. And then I was having a Thanksgiving dinner with my cousin and her husband, who's a farm worker from Oaxaca. And he said, you know, in Mexico, there's a visa we treat like gold, but nobody knows how to get it. And so I started researching it and then discovered that the visa is growing like crazy. The people who help bring in workers on this visa and the program in general is like highly fragmented. And it's a big market already, but it's growing and there's no technology around it. And if you think about like what needs to be in place to disrupt a market, you know, is the market big? Is it growing? Is it fragmented? And is there low technology adoption? And so all of those kind of core components were there to say, okay, there probably is an opportunity to use technology to make this more effective.
You mentioned earlier net revenue retention, which makes sense. But beyond that, what are the metrics you track most?
We track worker visas. So we launched in I think January of 2021. So we're about 6 quarters in, and we've done over 13,000 visas. And what's cool about this is like every visa is a worker coming over and making 10 to 20 times more money than they do back home. And some of these workers have been here before and been in the program before, but a lot of them are new. And they text our team that helps them with the visa process and says, I've been paid in dollars for the first time. This is the biggest paycheck I've ever seen. Workers have sent us pictures of some land they bought back home after working one or two seasons and making money that's, you know, to them, it's life-changing money. So definitely like tracking the worker visas. And then, yeah, obviously retention. And then another one is like enterprise customers. So like the idea of vertical software is you're going to land and expand. And so we try to target the largest farms in America. And even if we just do a pilot with them, once we get them on the platform, it's very sticky. And we have like a 98% retention rate, like gross retention rate, because people don't want to leave this platform when there's not really any alternative that competes with it. So those are kind of like the core metrics that we think about, as well as burn, obviously.
Beyond CISO labor, what's one innovative company in this space that you think everyone should know about or will know about in a couple of years?
I like what the team at Ambrook is doing. I think they've just recently raised around a year or two ago, and I don't know if they've raised again. But they were like automating loans and grants for farms, kind of doing some financial services. There's Cirrus Imaging, if you think about like the more on the production side, is like a company that has drones and kind of like helps you monitor the health of your crop. Heavy Connect does food safety, compliance, and timekeeping, which is something that we think is really interesting as well. But like, that's the interesting thing about ag is if you think about ag tech companies that are clear winners, you know, you've got hardware companies and, you know, Plenty is doing indoor farming and there's a big one that's doing, Tortuga is doing robotics for strawberry picking. Those are all interesting, but there's only one like, you know, non-hardware, really interesting, successful company that a lot of people know, which is Farmers Business Network. And they've kind of created a social network for farms and tried to aggregate data on the price of inputs like fertilizer and seed, create price transparency. And then they actually sell commodities. They sell fertilizer and seed. So they're an interesting company. They're kind of like an Amazon for agriculture. The difference is they're in the row crop space. And so they primarily serve like corn, wheat, and soy. So like farms that operate on a custom combine and don't necessarily need a lot of labor. When it comes to specialty crop agriculture, there isn't a company that I would say that everybody knows or even everybody in the industry knows that's really crushed it for this industry. Specialty crop is like, you know,
everything that's not corn everything. And soy, right?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much corn, wheat, and soy. So, I mean, I think we want to be the one that everybody remembers in a few years.
Yeah, it's fascinating how the whole industry works. It's corn, wheat, or soy is almost everything. And then, you know, everything from avocados to oranges to blueberries is relegated to specialty, which is still a massive industry in its own right, I imagine.
Yeah, corn, wheat, and soy is like heavily subsidized by the government so that, you know, we can compete for like with Brazil for ethanol prices. I find it bizarre that we're still doing that. But yeah, I mean, the America has the most efficient and most innovative agriculture in the world. And in some ways, like the healthiest agriculture in terms of like what we produce on the organic side and like the small farms that we have, at least at scale. But the actual like agriculture is at risk of, or the food production system in the US is at risk of dying out if we don't address the labor issues that farms face. Like strawberries, one in particular that some of the people in the industry tell me, I don't know if there will be strawberries grown in California in 10 years if we can't address some of the labor shortages, because the big brands will just buy from Chile and Mexico if you can't get reliable labor and you can't sort out like how to continue to do this efficiently. So, you know, the government, I think, needs to take a stronger stance in really supporting American agriculture. And ag is still the biggest employer in the world. So it's 1% of employment in the US, but it's still the biggest employer worldwide. And I think people love the idea of things being grown locally and eating locally, but that doesn't exist if we don't address like the issues with labor in the system.
What you said about corn still being subsidized is wild. A friend pointed out to me that one of the reasons we have so much high fructose corn syrup in all of our packaged products in America is because of the corn lobby, and we make so much corn. Evidently in Europe, if you go to a supermarket, there aren't a ton of prepackaged foods with corn syrup in them because they don't have a lot of corn. Michael, my last question for everybody on the show is about vision. Where would you like to see CISO Labor in 10 years?
I would like CISO to be the company that every farm operates off of. And that doesn't necessarily need to be only US-based, but like the back office software, the back office system that helps your farm run and operate your labor, your food safety compliance, kind of end-to-end operations, and also the platform that workers go to find opportunities. You know, Canada has a program similar to the US. Like I've mentioned, there's a lot of programs in Europe, and they're trying to copy the US model. So being like this platform where workers can find opportunities and access different services, and farms run their entire back office. That's kind of like the vision for the company.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
No, it's great to be here, Joe. Thank you for speaking with me.